In this week's session, you'll learn about the art of sports science through a revolutionary book titled Game Changer. You'll learn how to effectively improve balance in the athlete, and is this even possible? But most importantly, you'll get amazing perspective and insight from Dr. Fergus Conley, Performance Director for the University of Michigan and author of a truly innovative book titled Game Changer. Hey everybody, welcome to the Ardella Training Podcast, where our goal is to bridge the gaps in strength, performance, and injury prevention. My name is Scott Ardella, and welcome to episode number 226. Now, I read a ton of books, as you may know if you've listened to the show before, but I've never seen or read anything like this book, Game Changer. Now, I'm still reading the book as I record this, but it's been really mind-blowing so far. This is a mammoth book, and there's a few different ways to read this. And again, you're going to hear about all about this book in the interview session, but here's a couple strategies I wanted to share with you right now before we get into the session. You can read this book in bite-sized chunks. This is what I'm currently doing right now, and this is the way that I recommend reading a book like Super Training, for example. And you just read little bits and pieces every day. So again, this is what I'm doing right now, and this is the way to read a book like this that has so much information. Another strategy is to scan to the section that is most relevant or interesting to you. And you're going to get some other key ideas and strategies that we actually discuss in this interview session as we talk about how to use this book. Now, at the end of this session, I'm going to do something that I don't think I've ever done before, but I'm going to tell you two things that I learned during this interview session in a wrap-up segment, a very quick wrap-up segment that I'll call What I Learned. So I'll share those two things with you at the end of the interview. And as I get ready to share this interview with you, I did want to mention something. Don't forget about the Ask Scott page. I've been getting a lot of great questions and conversation on that page, and it's your opportunity to ask anything you'd like about training, performance, or anything at all. And certainly if you have suggestions or feedback or guests you'd like to hear, let me know that as well. So join the conversation there. You can go to ardellatraining.com/ask. And if you like the Ardella Training Podcast, please do me a favor. Don't forget to leave a review in Apple Podcasts. It's so easy to do, guys. There's a link in the show notes for this episode that explains exactly how to do it. And it can take you literally a minute or so of your time. And it really helps the show to grow. So thank you so much if you've already done that. And if you could do that, if you haven't done it, I'd really, really appreciate it. Now, to find this episode online, go to ardellatraining.com/RT226. I'll have all the important links and resources in the show notes section. And again, you can find that at ardellatraining.com/RT226. You're going to love the session this week, guys. I do think that we both had a little bit of a cold during the interview session, so please excuse that. I think we were both maybe just a little bit under the weather, but the content is exceptional. And by the way, I absolutely love Fergus's simple closing advice. So please pay attention to the simple and important takeaways that he gives at the end of the session. So with that, guys, let's jump into the interview this week. I know you're going to love it, and enjoy the interview. All right, guys, Dr. Fergus Conley is the performance director for the University of Michigan football program. Prior to that, he was with the San Francisco 49ers as the director of elite performance. He's also worked as a performance consultant for many other NFL and professional sports teams and has an extensive background in the area of sports science. Guys, I am very excited to have Dr. Fergus Conley join the show. And before we talk about the amazing book, Game Changer, Dr. Conley, can you tell the audience a little bit about your background and area of expertise? And the reason I wanted to ask you this specifically is because I think it's so interesting.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me on, Scott. If your audience hasn't figured it out by now, I'm not from Ann Arbor, not from Michigan. I grew up in Ireland, and growing up there, there isn't the huge, I guess, breadth of sports industry that there is in the U.S. So growing up, sport has always been my passion. Human performance and teams and groups of people working together to win. But I never planned on a career in it. I thought that I would, become a teacher and would coach part time. That was what I would have thought growing up. But and I went to university. I studied construction. I studied engineering. I studied advanced manufacturing. I did a PhD in computer optimization. But all the time, my passion, my interest, my hobby essentially was sport. And there wasn't, like I say, a sports industry to move into. And what I would do during my vacation time would be to, and this was when I finished playing sport myself in my late 20s, I would travel and visit coaches, find the best coaches, read newspaper articles, find out who the coaches for the best athletes were, and just out of interest, contact them, ask, could I come visit? Could I intern with them, which was becoming the term at the time. And that's what I essentially have done and still do, travel and meet the best coaches, the best experts all around the world, and just have learned from them over time. And as I would do that, I end up being offered a job initially. My very first job was in the English Premier League with Bolton Wanderers as a sports scientist strength coach, and it really just took off from there, because at the time I think there was a growing recognition that the preparation of elite athletes and elite performers needed more of a scientific understanding. I think traditionally what had happened, and it's the very same pathway that happened here in the U.S., is that retired soldiers or physical education people, became sports coaches. That's what happened. It was the same in San Francisco 49ers way back. It was the same with here at Michigan with the great Mike Gittleson, where people came in, and with generally, like I say, physical, an education background from the military, ended up becoming the fitness or the strength coach for sports teams. So as I was coming into the industry, I think there was an explosion in the interest of sports science in Europe, Australia. And I was very lucky to learn from some really bright people. But this has always been a passion of mine as opposed to a job.
Right. Now, you are Dr. Fergus Conley. If you don't mind me asking, what is your advanced degree in?
My advanced degree is in computer optimization and programming and in manufacturing, and that was what I studied. And it's interesting because my primary degree was in teaching, which it gave me a wonderful insight into dealing with young people, dealing with managing groups, managing, interacting with different personalities, finding the triggers, so to speak, that inspired kids and finding ways to communicate, which I learned. Then when I studied manufacturing, it was a completely different area, but it was wonderful for me to learn how to manage the interaction between people and technology. How do people manage technology, use technology, use to communicate with people? And then when I studied optimization and programming, it gave me a wonderful insight into being organized, being able to code, being able to interact with programmers. And like I said, all the time studying sport, doing strength courses, sports science courses, interning, I probably didn't realize the value that my formal education gave me when it came to working in sport. And I had a player who was retiring from rugby one time. I still remember this. We're sitting in his kitchen around the table. His wife was there. Kids were in bed, and he was about to retire, and he asked me for advice getting into coaching. And I said, go and spend 2 weeks with your wife, who was a primary schooler, a teacher. Spend 2 weeks with her in the classroom and just watch and observe and learn, which he did do. And just watch, how do you manage a group of people? How do you keep them all interested? How are you fair across? How do you make sure that you inspire the different levels within the group? And he's since become a very, very good, very, very good coach. But if you look back through the history of the great coaches, you know, the, you know, like I said, even the Bill Walshes, you know, they all started as teachers. The majority of them all started as teachers, and that insight cannot be underestimated.
Right. So your education and background has a huge part in what you do today.
Yes. Yeah. It probably indirectly. And I, like I said, I probably don't give it enough credit at times. I think it's really important as well for coaches that they have and learn from areas outside of sport, because we all, if you fall into just one career path, you end up being told the same thing. There ends up becoming a little bit of complacency, I guess, in that coaches are taught things from coaches that they know that are coach specific. But the insight, the inspiration, the alternative perspectives that you get from learning from and working in other fields, I think is as valuable, if not more valuable.
Yeah.
You know, when it comes to the challenges you face, because you're always going to be faced with something that you haven't come across before.
Right.
And very often when you see something from a different perspective, you have a far greater insight.
That's really, really interesting. And again, I wanted to ask that question because I didn't know your background, your backstory educationally. And I thought that you were going to say your PhD was in, you know, sports science or exercise physiology or something, and it's not. It's a completely
different
area.
And I think the other thing that was an advantage and is an advantage for me, I guess, is that I had a formal training in those areas. But because this is my passion, it's what I would sit at home at night reading. It's when,
right.
You know, when I'm bored, I would pick up. This is not, it's not a job. It's something that I love. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something that I just have a huge interest in. So this isn't it's not a labor at all. It's something that I love the challenge of trying to improve, you know, human performance in sport or in any area. So that's, again, something that maybe as coaches sometimes we take for granted, that this is something that a lot of people love to do, and we're doing something that we enjoy every day.
So sports science is a term that we hear a lot now. I think it's kind of, I don't know if it's a buzzword, but we've certainly heard more about sports science in recent years. Can you give us a definition of sports science?
Oh, that's one of the biggest problems, actually, with the industry today. In fact, if you look across, even look across all of the universities, including here at the University of Michigan, we don't have a sports science course. There are no courses that are clearly labeled as sports science. Yes, you have kines, you have exercise science, you have many, many other terms, but there isn't a sports science or performance science course. And simply just putting the term science before you know, sport doesn't make it sports science. And you know, we have that problem, and there are plenty of you know, initiatives or institutions or whatever that just choose to simply you know, science groups or groups of scientists who just simply put the term sport before it and, you know, claim that it's sports science, which is couldn't be further from the truth. And I've started to use the term performance science a lot more, because to try and make that differentiation between just simply the science of, you know, aspect of kinesiology or an aspect of exercise science, and to focus on what, again, is my passion, is how do we help groups of people win? And it's far more than simply understanding VO2 max or physiology. It's about the interaction of, you know, as you've mentioned, you know, to me before about the book, it's far more than simply just physiology. It's the interaction and integration of a wide variety of domains.
So the book is Game Changer, The Art of Sports Science. How long did it take you to write this book, and what was involved in writing such a book? Because this thing is, it's a textbook, really, is what it is. And I don't know, did you intend to write it like a textbook, or did that happen as things evolved?
I just walked past Desmond Howard in the corridor here, and he asked me, how many pages is there in this thing? He said, you still haven't given me a signed copy. But it's I don't know how many pages we're looking at. We're almost 460-odd pages. But it took 2 years of writing. The book took 2 years to write, but it is a culmination of 15 years, experience and work in the industry. And there is a lot that I left out. And in fact, I've just started the second, the follow-up to it, called Protocol, which is, Game Changer outlines the principles. And I took a lot of time to refine and to try and put together the principles that were, around behind my learning and behind my experience. And I tried to stay away from simply recipes or protocols, essentially, which I've started to put together now. But the goal was to try and clarify for the industry, my learning, my experience, and what I thought was critical to sum it up, but simply, how do we affect the scoreboard? And that's really what I wanted to do. I wanted to outline for people how we affect the scoreboard and how we as coaches draw on all of this new information, because there's so much information out there. I was complimenting you on your library. You know all too well how much information there is out there. So how do we refine it down? And I hope that Game Changer is a starting point for sports science, for performance science, and for coaches going forward.
Who specifically is the book for? Is it more for the coach, but is it also for the athlete and maybe the serious sports fan as well? Who is it written for?
There are two answers. I think that the smart answer is it's the book that I wrote for myself starting out.
Yeah.
Because like your library, I have a huge library at home, and I was always looking for a book that would help me answer the questions I had, which is how do I improve this team? And there are lots of books out there in strength training. There are lots of books on psychology. There are lots of books on flexibility, nutrition, supplementation. So my aim and my goal was to draw on the key principles of all of those, pull them together into how I integrated it over the years and what has worked for me, and to allow the next generation coming through to understand what they need to start with, or the starting point. So it was the book that I wanted to write for my younger self. And the second point is that the book is for really, it's bang in the middle between the coach, the athlete, and the strength coach or sports scientist. It's not aimed at one of those specifically, because I think that's one of the failings of the industry as a whole, or the area of winning teams. And the reason I say that is that one of the biggest challenges all teams have is the communication between the head coach, strength coach, medical, athlete. So this book is sitting in the middle. Tom Crean, who has been a wonderful advocate for it, is an example of a coach who has found an awful lot of benefit in it. And then you've got even retired athletes, like I say, like Desmond, you've got other athletes, you've got strength coaches who all see the commonality. So the aim was to generate this common dialogue, this common language that would help us again refocus on how do we affect the game and how do we change the game.
This may be the most important question of the interview right now. How do you recommend using the book? And what I'm asking is, do you recommend the reader read cover to cover, or read certain sections? The major sections are the game, the player, the preparation, and the coach. So different themes here to these four major sections. How do you recommend reading it? And then the other follow-up second question is, what would be the best way to apply the material? Because there is so much material, what is the easiest, best way to take out some of the material, the principles that you write about, and actually use them?
two brilliant questions, two of the best questions I've been asked, and two very simple questions in which is also a compliment. But in terms of how do you read it, pick it up and read the section that you find of most, or that you think is of most relevant to you, and start with that. And then what you will find is, because of the way the book is written, it will draw you into the other areas. But pick it up and read the part that appeals to you. If you're the coach, maybe it might be the game, or it might be the it might be the preparation. If you're the player, pick up and read the preparation aspect of it. But you will find that the book itself is purposely, again, an integrated model, because the game is the integration of all of these elements. In terms of the implementation, somebody's asked me before, what did I aim to achieve with the book? My sole goal is to make people think. That's really it. Just I want to challenge your thoughts. I want to challenge how you look at the game. I am very happy if you disagree with me, more than happy for people to disagree, because that means it inspires debate. It inspires people to think and to challenge. Obviously, I believe that the model that I have is what works, but if you don't agree with me, that's fine. Let's talk it through, challenge your thought process. I'm not, I hate dogma. I hate people who have this idea of just one singular philosophy. So the aim is to, and again, that's why I purposely wrote this book first before I wrote Protocol, because I wanted people to have the principles on board so that they could form their own philosophy, their own vision. And how you implement it then is very specific to you. But the principles we should agree on for the most part. So it's not a diktat, it's not dogma. It's an attempt to make people think differently about the game and allow them to implement the principles themselves, with their athletes.
Is it a good idea to maybe start at the end of the book, where you talk about the 12 takeaways at the very end of the book? Start there and then maybe go back to the beginning for better understanding?
Sure. I think you made the point earlier. I think it really depends on where you're coming from.
Right.
I think the coach will find the game principles really interesting and a different way to look at it. I think the strength coach will find the preparation aspect of it, interesting and challenging. The idea that we move away from linear periodization to a more tactical periodization or a morphological approach where we look at the week to week. I think some of the coaches will find the last section, the coach, the planning, the organization, of interest as well. The general manager, quite a few, ironically, in baseball, which I don't mention in the book at all, have found a lot of value in it. And it's not a sport of a lot of experience in, but they've got a lot of benefit in understanding the last section. So again, it's meant to do that. It's meant to try and pull everybody together and give people a starting point within the organization.
Can the book be beneficial for any athlete in any sport, and then in individual sports? We're talking about team sports here a lot, but
yes,
for individual athletes, the principles can be applied as well.
Yes, very much so. Bill Sweetnam is arguably the most successful swim coach in the world, an Australian swim coach, but he used to emphasize to me that in team sports, we're trying to encourage the athlete themselves to take on individual responsibility. And in individual sports, he said, we're very much trying to get the athlete to take on a team mentality so that they can rely on each other and learn. So while the book is aimed at team sports, there are a huge number of takeaways for the individual athlete and how they prepare, and many of the principles in terms of the athlete preparation translate, of course, because we're essentially dealing with the same, the same person all of the time.
We spend a lot of time looking at athletes through the physical, looking at power, strength, speed development. I believe you say that this is a mistake, that there's so many other components to the athlete, and this is changing in the sports development climate today. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I think, Just to back up a little bit, what I really mean there is that one of the biggest failings that or I guess distractions perhaps that have happened over the last 10 to 15 years is because there's so much specialization, and this goes across all industries. This isn't just relevant to sport. It happens in manufacturing, it's happened in the military, it's happened in security, it's happened in many, many industries. The specialization and the rush to specialize has meant that there has been the creation of silos. So in our industry, there's been an incredible focus on the specializations, special strength exercises or strength and conditioning. And this is good, but unless it's done in the context of the overall athlete development, there becomes an overemphasized or an imbalanced focus on one aspect of performance, and in this case, the physical components. And because of that, there's often the impression created, whether rightly or wrongly, that the physical components are that which determine the success of an athlete. So if, J.J. Watt can squat X weight, or, a Justin Smith can lift X amount of weight, that is the determining factor, when very often it's not. Now, it is important, but it's not the key factor. And, I use the example of another somewhat famous Wolverine called Tom Brady, who is an excellent example of somebody who is, and don't mistake this, is an incredible athlete, but he succeeds because of his other qualities, perhaps more so than his physical, but he's still an incredible athlete. So it's how do we make sure that we don't create an imbalanced athlete? And I don't mean structurally imbalanced. I don't mean physically. I mean imbalanced as a whole. And that's, I think, our goal. So it's not that strength and conditioning is bad. It's not that, people have challenged me on why periodization is bad. It's not bad. It's, are we creating a balanced model, a holistic model?
Since you mentioned early specialization, I'm just curious your thoughts on the younger athlete, the youth athlete. I think that we're seeing a lot of early specialization, and I think it's because of the pressure to excel in a sport. And I think that parents, coaches think that when you go into other sports, you're going to regress from that sport that you're trying to be good in. What are your thoughts around specializing too early in the youth athlete, and what is the best solution to that?
I think first and foremost, I've had this conversation here with Coach Harbaugh and with Ward Manuel, the athletic director. Our job in collegiate sport, and it's the same in pros, are to develop good Michigan men who become good men, or good Michigan people who become good people. And that's our ultimate goal. And that's, first of all, where we create a balanced athlete that doesn't suffer from the stresses and strains of life. That's the first thing. But in terms of the youth and as they're coming through, we need to keep that in context. So the goal really is to develop, is to allow the athlete to have experiences and focus on the experience that the young kid is having to allow them develop into a good athlete. So the specialization sometimes creates an imbalanced experience, a very pressurized experience, and this can be a disadvantage as the athlete develops. And there are plenty of studies out there that suggest, that players who make it in the to the combine or in the draft have been multi-sport athletes, and perhaps the data and the studies aren't quite accurate. Maybe they can be misconstrued, but I still think it supports the idea that a young athlete who has a variety of experiences, is a better all-round athlete that can be more resilient and can last longer. And I like to focus on what is the experience of the athlete rather than the input, because when we talk about specialization, we're generally talking about what do we do to the athlete. Well, what's the experience of the athlete as a whole? I think that's really important for us to consider.
Can you expand more on the experiences? Because that was actually something I wanted to ask you about. I think you wrote that coaches should not instruct but facilitate rich learning experiences. What specifically do you mean by that? What does that look like, having a rich learning experience?
I think the focus has to be on... we as coaches, and this is human instinct, we focus on what we put into the athlete. We focus on the number of sets and reps and those kinds of things. I think that, and this is a good thing, but I think when we put the focus on the athlete and what are they experiencing, sometimes we realize that we can get the benefit subconsciously, and it makes us focus more on what's the experience of the athlete. So, you know, we talk about readiness, what can the athlete tolerate, et cetera, et cetera. I think focusing on the other person, focusing on the athlete, what are they going to experience today in terms of, and, you know, this is obvious. For example, we know that if the athlete attempts to move the bar as fast as possible, that they will get a speed, a power response, even if the bar is not necessarily moving. It's the experience internally in the athlete, physiologically and psychologically, that has the impact, not the environment, not just simply what we put into the athlete or what we expose them to. It's what do they experience.
What can positively influence the experience for athletes? What can coaches do to enhance athletes' experiences?
So this was something that Steve Jobs, for everybody remembers, or those of us who have purchased iPhones, which I don't know if there's anybody left in the world who hasn't at some stage. Right. But remember when you purchased your first iPhone, you have the little piece of plastic, you open it up, you lift the top of the box off, and it falls gently down. It's almost beautifully fit so that the top and the bottom part just slip apart. It doesn't fall out. It's beautiful. The surface on both are carefully constructed so that they just slide apart, and the phone is sitting there. You lift it out, you take the plastic off it, you press the button, and it's on. Steve Jobs spent an inordinate amount of time trying to establish and design that experience that I just described to you so that the experience of the person would be a positive one, smooth, seamless, that this is something that I can just pick up, start. There is no user manual with an iPhone. A lot of people have not realized that there's no user manual. Why? That's right. Because it's intuitive. Yeah. So think of your athlete that you coach. That's your experience of using an iPhone. Well, what's the experience of the athlete as they go through your weight room, your training experience, that makes it a positive experience for the athlete? So it's all about the environment. It's all about our behaviors and how we interact. So the two key things really are: what is the environment that they come into? In terms of the artifacts, in terms of the cleanliness, for example, in terms of, I don't want to just reduce it to cleanliness, but what's the experience? What does it look like? How does it feel to them? And these are subliminal things. And then secondly, what are the behaviors that they experience? How are they spoken to? Is it positive? Is it upbeat? Even, you know, things like music, color, things like this. So that is your experience. And all of those things have a positive impact on the athlete. Here with Jim Harbaugh and his father, actually, one of them used to say, you know, if you want enthusiasm, act enthusiastic. Yeah. So what is the experience of the athlete as they come through your door? These are very small, big things. Yeah. that really impact, that make the difference. And we've all seen it. We've seen two coaches who are, one coach is incredibly well qualified, can recite all kinds of statistics to you, but maybe has a poor, what we might call people skills or soft skills. And then we have somebody else who has maybe brilliant soft skills, maybe not as knowledgeable in terms of strength and conditioning, but they get a better response, get a better result. And it's partly to do with this, the experience of the athlete.
Right. I love the iPhone analogy because I get it.
Yes, everybody gets it. But, you know, I don't know how many people have said, how many pages are there in the iPhone manual? And they'll pause for a second and realize, oh, hang on, there is no handbook, there is no manual.
That's right.
And then they realize that the experience that Steve Jobs created for them was one that was seamless, and was it was, and again, it comes back to, really what this comes back to is, what is the What is the experience? What is the emotion that we're trying to establish in the player? To go a level deeper, we're really talking about emotion. How do I manage emotion in the athlete? Because the decisions that they will make ultimately under pressure, and the majority of our decisions with many people are emotionally based. So again, that's what I'm trying to get to, and that's, you know, again, that's on a deeper level again. But that's really what is at the root of this when I talk about the player experience.
What do you see as the biggest challenges for athletes in today's world? And what can coaches do better to support athletes?
The challenges, and again, this is something that spoken about here at Michigan, challenges are not on the field. The challenges, you know, Josh Gordon has just been reinstated by the NFL to play with the Browns, an incredible athlete. And he's spoken very candidly about his challenges. You know, when I was at the 49ers, we had players as well who faced similar challenges. The challenges for the modern elite athlete are not on the field challenges. By the time you make it to the NFL, the English Premier League, you're playing international rugby, or you're an elite special operator in the military, you can do what you've been trained to do. You're there because of that. But what keeps you there and what continues to allow you to sustain, to use the Marine phrase, sustain the change or sustain that high level of performance, are lifestyle issues. They are not physical, they're not training issues, they're not coaching issues. They're lifestyle skills, coping skills, change skills. And that's the biggest challenge that we face in sport today. And I go through it in the book, and I present the model that I've used in terms of what are the key things that we need to help our athletes with. And bear in mind that society has changed, the family structure, all of those different types of things have changed now. So the role of the strength coach, who will spend in many cases, you know, and will be around athletes maybe 4 or 5 hours a day, their role is incredibly influential in the growth, the personal growth, the social growth, the social awareness of young athletes in American society today.
So you feel like the off-field challenges are the same regardless of whether it's professional athletes, college athletes, different sports? It's all the off-the-field things that are the most challenging things for today's athlete.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
Because the training we can control, I hate to use the phrase, but we do control that. You know, number of sets, reps, the practice, the time, we have influence on that. But the teams that struggle when they lose players, generally lose them because of either a discipline, a lifestyle, a substance issue. If we can create a better model for these athletes coming through, they can sustain their level of performance so that it doesn't impact on the field issues very often. And those, you know, when we coach our athletes, we know that when they don't have a good game, it's because of something that's happening off the field. Now, it may manifest itself and we may see it on the field, but really, the truth being told, it's something off the field that is affecting them more so, because that life is more important, believe it or not. Even though I've written a book about sport, life is more important than sport. I hate to break it to a lot of people.
Right. Well, sport teaches so much about life, right? So there's so many parallels.
Correct. And if truth be known, that this is why we play sport. It's for our young people, and this is why, there are mothers and fathers who will bring their kids to engage in sport and other social activities at a young age. And the reason that they're doing that is to help them understand the challenges they're going to face in life in general. How do I overcome a challenge? The dedication, the discipline to learn something new. How do I interact with others? How do I take criticism? How do I take defeat? Or more importantly, how do I take success and how do I manage it? How do I look after people? These are the skills that we teach in sport, and these are the skills that we need in life.
So I started reading the book. One of the questions I asked you earlier was, how do you recommend reading this book? I started reading it from the beginning, and then what I did prior to the interview. I haven't finished the book yet, but I started skimming through some later chapters. I saw a section where you talked about the importance of fundamentals, which really struck a chord with me because that's something I'm huge on fundamentals. We talk about that a lot with other people who come on the show. Can you talk about why you wrote that section on the importance of fundamentals, and does that apply for all athletes at different levels?
Yes, it does. The fundamentals are critical, and they're incredibly important, of course, because this is what we rely on when we are ultimately trying to execute something. But what changes is the time that we have to do it and the pressure that we're under, and we resort back to our norm. We resort back to essentially a groove that we've created. But reinforcing and developing those fundamentals are very important. Now, how we do it is an incredible challenge, and sometimes we get caught up in trying to find the perfect fundamental or the perfect action. In other words, there is no perfect throwing technique. There is no perfect passing technique, but there is a technique that is specific to that person. So it's developing that fundamental. That's what I mean. It's not that there's no such thing as a perfect golf swing, but there's a perfect one for that moment, that athlete. That's what's so important. And again, where this comes from is when you watch the elite athlete under pressure, on the biggest stages, they are going to resort to their tried and true fundamental when we come under most pressure, because we're using the rest of the rest of our resources, our functional energy to concentrate and to allow us to execute.
So you mentioned that how we do it is a challenge. Why is that? And how can that be done better?
How we develop the fundamental?
Yeah.
The fundamentals.
Yeah. You said that developing, sticking with the fundamentals, essentially developing the fundamentals can be a challenge. I think that's what you said. So.
Yes, because very often that what we tend to do is we tend to get distracted by the other things that happen. So for example, on game day, give you an example, a practical example with sports teams. I firmly believe that it's incredibly important that you maintain and try and maintain things as normal as possible and the same all of the time, because on the biggest stage, there are going to be so many different things. You'll be playing in a new stadium. You'll be playing in front of a bigger crowd. There will be more pressure. People will be asking you for tickets. All of these new things that will come in. But the fundamental is what's going to determine whether you win or lose the game. And there are going to be people who know what you're going to do, but you still have to execute that fundamental skill, that fundamental tactical formation, whatever it is on that stage. And when we come under pressure, our functional reserve or our battery that we have to manage all of those external things, whatever is left is what we're going to use to execute the fundamentals. So they have to be a habit that we use, an instinctual habit that is based on instinct, which again I go back to emotion, which is where it's formed. So that's why the fundamental is so hard to it's so important and it's difficult. But we can mitigate against that by keeping everything as normal as possible for the athlete where we can.
If I asked you how an athlete, an average athlete, could get to the elite level, what is the one thing or the couple of critical things that would be important for that athlete going from average to elite, in your opinion?
The most important thing, you generally have two types of athlete, but the athlete who's very driven and who's very focused sometimes can become almost paralyzed by the stress and strain of trying to make that next level, and they get distracted by those other things that we just spoke about, and they move away from their fundamentals. The best athletes are those who can execute their basic skills repeatedly under the greatest pressure. That's what we're looking for on game day. We're looking for athletes who can execute the basics as they have been prepared. So I think the difference between the average and elite are the elite athlete can do what they've practiced so many times, time and time before, but can do it under greater pressure and do it with in at a faster rate at that time, because the difference between lower levels and higher levels is very often simply time. You have less time to make the decision. So you have to move. When people talk about the zone or autopilot or whatever term you want to use, again, they're relying on the habit that has been ingrained in them from a very young age.
Would that tie back to what you talk about? I thought one of the key chapters earlier in the book was the coactive model, looking at the four different coactives.
Yes.
There. So it sounds like what you just said would really be developing those four areas. I wonder if you could just briefly touch on the four areas in the coactive model.
So the question you asked earlier about, you know, the physical components, that there's been an overemphasis on that. Well, really what I'm saying is that there has been maybe an underemphasis on the psychological model, the psychological development of players, the tactical development of players, and the other area that is, again, maybe the foundation of all of this is just basic health and wellness. So we need to develop athletes who are tactically, technically, psychologically, and physically well developed, so that some of these things don't become a disadvantage or a detracting from someone's performance. So take Tom Brady as an example. He is an incredible athlete, incredible physical athlete, but if his physical qualities fell below a certain limiting factor, a certain limiting mark, then all of his other, he would not be able to rely on his psychological components, his tactical awareness, all of these different things. So it's the development of the athlete as a whole that is critical. So simply taking a guy into a weight room and pushing up his squat or his bench or his vertical jump or whatever, is there comes a point where it becomes the pursuit of a quality that's not actually going to impact him, whereas spending time developing his tactical awareness, playing the game, would be of far more benefit. And this is one of the challenges that youth sport have.
Do you think that that chapter alone could significantly help a coach improve the development of their athletes, looking at this model that you?
Yeah. Yes. I think that one of the biggest mistakes that we make is when we watch a person, for example, let's say, you know, somebody misses an open shot late on in a game. Well, the obvious comment is, well, they're tired or they're not fit enough. But that may not be the case at all. It may be that their technique is letting them down, that they're not able to create enough space tactically. It's not simply it. Fatigue late in a game, or sorry, not fatigue, but poor performance late in a game is not simply purely down to physical qualities. It's down to how efficient they were early in the game, tactically and technically, to be able to execute late in the game. Games are not won purely on physical qualities alone. So having that model, that coactive model with the four areas, allows us to identify the weakness in the athlete.
Right.
Because you have essentially a battery, you have a functional reserve, the amount of energy that you draw on. If you start a game where you're tactically inept, where you're out of position a lot, you're forced to run an awful lot more. So if you're playing a very, very astute team that can make you run more, well, obviously you're going to be tired late in the game. But if you're tactically well prepared and you're efficient tactically early on in the game, you will have more energy later in the game. So it's making sure that the athlete is balanced and developed in a balanced manner. Then they can the synergy comes. That's why it's coactive. That's why it's not simply integrative, or it's not simply four separate pieces plugged together. This is a coactive model that all impact on each other.
Is balance possible? I mean, are we trying to normalize the balance?
No.
Okay.
But what you're trying to do is to ensure that of the four qualities,
yes,
that you don't have one that is below a limiting factor. So back to the Tom Brady example,
right,
if he didn't have at least a minimum of physical qualities, well, then he wouldn't be able to. That would not give him a platform for his incredible mental toughness, his wonderful tactical and his technical ability to be displayed and to exploit it. That's the key point. Comes a point where you must have. It goes back to the question that we've asked time and time again in rugby and in in football.
Yeah.
When is strong, strong enough? Well, ask the opposite. What is the minimum that you need to be able to, what's the minimal mental strength? What's the minimal technical ability? What's the minimal strength that you need? Because if you've got a wonderfully intelligent player, they can compensate for these other areas. And the key term, I guess, as opposed to balance is really, how can we compensate? Because the great athletes, even the Michael Jordans, early on was a physical superstar, like I said, the only guy that we ever saw fly unaided. But as he developed later in his game, he developed wonderful tactical and technical ability that allowed him to use a fadeaway jump shot that, again, gave him a whole new set of tools in his arsenal. And that's what we're talking about. And the truly, truly elite athletes are the ones who continue to develop in those four different areas as their career develops.
And I think that makes a lot of sense, about what you said about balance and not falling below that minimum threshold. It's funny, you just mentioned how strong is strong enough. I literally just did a podcast on that very question. It's a question, yep. It's a burning question for me. I think it's something that's probably not discussed enough.
But that's why, and I use the graphics. We spent a lot of time trying to illustrate graphically how you can have two great players. You take a Peyton Manning and take a Cam Newton, who achieve wonderful levels of achievement. When I say achievement, in terms of what they how they perform, but how they achieve that level of performance is completely different. Cam relies on a wonderful physical ability, great tactical technical ability. People have questioned perhaps psychologically. Are there areas where he can improve on managing his emotions and whatever? But then you take the Peyton Manning, who physically, towards the end of his career particularly, was limited because of so many injuries, but had an incredible mental toughness, great in-game awareness, insight, great tactical knowledge. So you've got two players who can achieve those two levels, but how they get there are two completely different pathways. The point, taking Peyton as an example, is when he physically wasn't able to achieve that functional minimum, this is when the rest of the other co-actors started to suffer. So it's the ability to compensate. The elite athlete can compensate. Cam's great physical ability buys him a little bit of time, buys him the ability to perform differently to allow his skills to develop. So this is what we're talking about. With the young athlete, the key is to ensure that they don't overemphasize physical qualities at the expense of their skill, their game awareness, their mental toughness. And the best example of this is seen when you have players who, young players, as they develop, who have, grow a little bit quicker, get a little bit bigger, a little bit stronger than others. As they progress in their career, many of them don't develop the skills aspect, their technical aspect, well enough or good enough, because they rely on the physical qualities. Then when the other kids catch up with them, then they're at a slight disadvantage. And this is why smaller players sometimes develop skills quicker and better, because that's what they have to rely on. So it's ensuring that you develop the athlete. Using the word balance is the wrong way, but it's developing it, ensuring that you develop it so that it's not at the expense of one of the other qualities is the key perspective to have on this.
Are there objective measures, since we're talking about the coactive model, are there objective measures for each of the four areas?
No. And again, this is how I've approached over time. And I'm sure that in time we will develop these. And I do have algorithms that I use, but I'm not confident enough that they're accurate yet. But there are relationships between some of the different qualities. But again, this is such a new idea that we develop the athlete as a whole, holistically, that there are no benchmarks or there is no data yet to suggest that these are the actual minimums, the actual objective minimums that we should use.
Okay. Let's fast forward a little.
I should have lied and told you that there are. We can develop a product, but truthfully, no.
Let's fast forward a little bit to the six laws of winning. I just want to ask you one question about that. This is a chapter that stuck out to me. I actually had a friend that I showed the book, and he's like, wow, the six laws of winning. I got to read that chapter. So let's take one of the laws, the law of knowledge. Can you talk a little bit about that?
This is one of the challenges that we have again in this industry, is the amount of knowledge and information that there is out there can be confusing at times. There has to be a basic knowledge and understanding of the game and of the process by which you go through. It doesn't mean that you need to be an expert. Like some of the best coaches that I know have a limited knowledge of the different areas that they're trying to perform in, but they're not necessarily experts. But it's having that knowledge and across the breadth of areas that they develop. And the best coaches have this. Some of the best coaches that I've been around have that knowledge. In other words, you can't develop athletes, or you can't improve athletes, if you don't have some basic knowledge across the areas. So it's and the more that we can learn and the more that we can develop, the better it is for our coaches. And this is why coach education is so important as we go forward, that there is a basic level of understanding, and it's not fake sports science, to use a stolen term.
Couple more questions and we'll wrap things up. I did want to ask you about, and I don't know if anything is written about this in the book, but the higher rates of injuries today in sport. We could take ACL, for example, ACL injuries. What, if anything, can be done to reduce injury in sport? Are we moving in that direction, or what are your thoughts, comments about that?
I think there are a few things. I think that one of the things that is very commonly promoted by a lot of software, a lot of technology, is that they can reduce injury. And it's a little bit like turkeys voting for Thanksgiving. Well, everybody wants to reduce, injury, but you have to recognize that simply just collecting data or using a piece of technology is not enough. The key ways that you reduce injury are by communicating with the athlete and all of the staff, so that we all know the state of the athlete, if the athlete is tired. And these are common sense things. This is not a magic bullet, but communication between the different specialists, the scheduling, the programming, or if you want to use the term periodization, but what I mean is that the head coach scheduling is critical. In other words, that the head coach knows the order in which a practice should be developed. In other words, that there's a warm-up, that there's an individual skill period developed, and that we move from easy to hard, that as the session goes on, we increase the amount of rest. These key rules, and this goes back to the law of knowledge, these key rules and this basic knowledge and understanding is the important thing. These are the important things that reduce injury. Yes, we can do FMS, which is an important piece of the puzzle, and we can do, and there are lots of other technology we can use. But if you don't have good communication and you don't have good scheduling and good rules for scheduling the session and planning the session, then you are increasing the probability of injury. We can't eliminate injury. We can't, certainly not in football. Right. You might be able to in chess, but not in football. And it's very important that's recognized, so that people don't run off using a fool's gold. And one of the challenges of sports science and sports science technologies are, again, that they very often address one single aspect of, whether it's hydration or whatever it is. The elements that impact an injury are accumulative, and they're multifaceted.
Yeah. Yeah, we could probably spend a lot of time talking about that. I at least wanted to just take a big picture viewpoint of that question and see what your thoughts were. You talk a lot about leadership in the book, which is great to see that. And a question that I ask, I'm not going to ask you about leadership specifically, but a question I do ask guests is there a book, one book that you could recommend that has impacted you the most? I don't know if it would be a leadership book or something else, but what would be the book that you would recommend to the audience?
Letter to Garcia. It'll take you 6 minutes to read it. It's a very old book. That's recommended by, I believe, one of the first readings in one of the Naval Special Operations units in the Marine Corps in I believe in West Point as well, where I speak soon. But it's a very simple book, and it's very simple. Somebody was asked to do a task, and when you ask somebody, can they do something for you? do they just go and get it done, or do you get 4 or 5 questions? Do you get that, you know, and basically that is leadership. If you're asked to do something or something needs to be done, how do we get it done? And very, very simple book, very old book, and you can get it in an audio file if you wish. But that's just it's a very simple book. I can't honestly pick one book. It is a section actually that I have in the next book coming out, which is basically to answer that question, to answer your question maybe in more detail, a recommended reading list for the different aspects, the different professionals in the career, because there are so many wonderful books out there that have been written over the years. Like Bill Walsh's, everybody has read Bill Walsh's book, The Score Takes Care of Itself.
Yeah.
But his other book, The Winning Edge, is again an equally fascinating, if not better book. But there are so many excellent books out there. Leif Balbum and Jocko Willink's book, Extreme Ownership, is another very good one. Team of Teams by Stanley McChrystal. There's an excellent book that I think everybody in sport should read called A Season of Life, which is written about a guy called Biff Poggi, and who coaches in St. Francis High School in Baltimore. And, you know, that's a wonderful book where he as the coach is jogging onto the field and a parent asks him about the kids and says, how are they going to do? And as he's jogging on, he turns back and shouts, I'll tell you in 20 years. And ultimately, that is what our job is. Our job is to be able to look at the coaches or our players in 20 years' time and to see how we've impacted the players that we work with today and tomorrow.
Yes. So thank you for sharing all those great resources. I've never heard of Letter to Garcia, so I'm going to go check that one out first. And I'm sure it will appeal to people, because if it's a 6-minute read, that's perfect.
Get the audio book, and a lot of people will wonder why I'm talking about a book that was written 100 years ago. But the moral of the story is the important takeaway.
Okay. Not to get ahead of ourselves, but you mentioned the next book. When is that book coming out? Is that a year, a couple years away?
No. I'm hoping that this one will take a little bit. It's really a lot of the stuff that I couldn't put into the 460-odd pages of Game Changer. And what had happened was, essentially, as I was putting Game Changer together, I realized that if I was to put everything into this, right down to the minutiae in terms of actual training sessions and practical things, there were two things were going to happen. People were going to just rush to, you know, this section on sets and reps and time and whatever, and miss the principles.
Yes.
And the other one was that I was going to lose the key takeaways from Game Changer, which were to outline the fundamental principles behind how do we win team sports. And that was that's what I wanted to do. So it'll take another few months to get it done, but I'm hoping that it'll be a perfect follow on from Game Changer.
Fantastic. So people should read Game Changer if they want to what?
Change the scoreboard. Change the scoreboard. How do you change the scoreboard? There are, in sport today, we do so many things that don't affect the scoreboard, that maybe are not the optimal way to prepare. So, you know, how do you change the scoreboard? How do you fix problems with your team? And that's why I wrote the book. That's what I've been doing for over 15 years, is helping teams win and finding the answers to that. And I think if one thing you to think of the book is, I've made so many mistakes, followed so many different aspects of training over the years. This book will save you an awful lot of time. It will save you years and years of learning that I've enjoyed going through, but followed many rabbit holes that didn't lead anywhere, and had the benefit though of working with and learning from some incredible coaches on almost every single continent all around the world in so many great sports. And I wanted to write the book, like I said, for the younger me, or the people coming through now, so that they have one resource that will tell the truth about what sports science and performance is.
Yeah, and before I forget, congratulations, by the way, on Game Changer and all the success. People are raving about this book right now. It's getting a lot of.
I'm genuinely humbled because, like we spoke about earlier, Alvar Meil, who he's the only strength coach to ever won a ring at the NFL and NBA, coached the Bulls, worked with Bill Walsh. I remember him years ago when I was with him, and this guy was talking about this athlete he made and that athlete he made. And when the guy left, Al said to me, he said, remember that nobody ever made an athlete. The only people who ever made an athlete were their parents. So I've been very fortunate to work with some great people, to work and learn from some great coaches. Incredibly fortunate, incredibly humbled. So the book is a reflection of my learning from them, as opposed to any great credit to me necessarily.
Yeah. And I should mention that we really just barely scratched the surface on the content in this book. So people should definitely understand that. It's unbelievable book. And even the graphics that you mentioned, I mean, are just really unbelievable. I could see a lot went into that as well. So.
Well, an interesting, I think what maybe people wouldn't know this, but these are graphics and images that I've been using for 10 years that, these are not, and they're things that I didn't share with people because they were a competitive and are a competitive advantage.
Okay.
And have been for years, in order to illustrate and to communicate with coaches. And that's what I'm delighted to be able to share it now with coaches across all sports. Like I said, baseball, for some reason, coaches have found it fascinating. And I've no experience of baseball. I've never worked it, but a lot of baseball coaches, basketball coaches have found, as well as football, have found it to be particularly helpful. So it's very humbling.
Excellent. So the book is available on Amazon. Is there anywhere else that you want to direct people to go? Or
Barnes & Noble, Amazon, all of the above.
All the usual. Okay. Fergus, where's the best place to find you, your work online?
I'm on Twitter and I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn. I will always try and, because I've been very, like I said, I've been very, very fortunate genuinely that great coaches have always helped me. So I always try, and if anybody emails me, I always try and help. I will always reply. Sometimes a week late, Scott, as you know. but I will always, no problem. I will always, because again, the industry has some great people. And I've been, like I said, very fortunate to have been helped along my way. So I'm only too happy to help and give back.
What would be the takeaway action for the listener after hearing our interview? What can they actually, something simple that they could walk away with and apply?
Buy the book. I think the takeaway for me from in my experience, or what is my conclusion at this stage is that you everybody works hard. You have to work hard. You have to be very honest with your own abilities and what you can do. But the most important one is to be humble. Is to be very humble about this industry and about what we do, because I've been humbled so many times. I keep learning new things, and that humility is what will keep you learning and will ensure that every time you sit down and critique a game, critique a performance, critique your own performance, critique an athlete, that you will continue to get better. And there's a great coach, Ashley Jones, coached the All Black rugby team, most successful team. And he was one of the first to really emphasize or to teach me the value of that humility in terms of your own personal development. Because, again, referring to the library of books you have behind you, there's so much out there to learn, and we will keep learning. So when I get to the second edition of Game Changer, I'm sure I'll have learned a lot more and be able to add a lot more.
Yeah. Well, let's take the closing advice as to be humble and to keep learning. I love that. That is
absolutely
awesome. So, Fergus, thank you so much. It's been a real joy, a real pleasure. I appreciate your time.
Pleasure to be mine, Scott. Thank you so much.
Guys, what a great session with Dr. Fergus Conley. I really enjoyed the interview. A couple of quick follow-ups here, and then we will close it down. Just to let you know, the book that he mentioned is called A Message to Garcia. A Message to Garcia. So check that out. You can find that on Amazon.com. The things that I learned during the interview, two things really stuck out to me. Actually, there were several, but just two things to think about. And the first thing is when he talked about the goal of the book, which is to make people think. And I really thought this is interesting, and here's why. Because when you read a book like this, I think it's important to think about the information and then decide how to use it, how to apply the information, come up with your own conclusions and takeaways, whether you agree or disagree. So I love that he said that a goal of the book is to get you to think, because I think there is a lot to actually think about in reading this book. And the second simple thing that I've already put into practice is to focus on a rich learning experience. And that is the total training experience, seeing it from the athlete's or client's perspective, creating an internal, impactful experience for the person that you're working with. How does it make them feel? So I love the Apple analogy that he talked about, the iPhone analogy. And again, two simple things that I learned or were impactful for me during the interview session. So guys, that's a wrap for this week. I hope you really, really enjoyed it and got great value out of it. Definitely check out the book Game Changer. It is truly a impressive book that I know you'll get a lot of use from, especially if you're a coach. So that's a wrap, guys. Make sure to go to ardellatraining.com/join to become part of the Ardella training community. I'll see you next week, guys. Thanks for being here, and we'll talk again soon. Take care.